And I think I could probably help you more than just giving you a lecture at this point by doing that. If there are no questions, then I'll move on and we'll have the lecture. But if there are questions, do not feel intimidated. Do not feel that your question is not important. But I want you to ask the question, and I'll do my best to respond and answer it. Yes, ma'am. Stand to your feet, please. Okay, thank you very much for asking that question. The question is this: should a woman teach in the church and have an active role in this part of ministry in the church? And the answer is yes, so long as that does not cause you to neglect your family. As long as your children are probably old enough that that would not be a problem. And as long as you and your home life. I think it is a critical danger when that a woman stays so busy in the church and the pastor is also so busy in the church that when you both come home, you're beat and there is no relationship that you can have just to enjoy one another. But that would be my only holdback. My wife does not teach in the church on a regular basis, but she teaches from time to time. She speaks in groups all over, and so my stand is very open on that. Only, I've seen women, and here's what I was driving at the other day. I've seen women who said, well, I am called to the ministry, and they go flitting off all over the country and leave their kids 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years of age home to bat for themselves the best they can until daddy gets home from the office or whatever. And I just feel that that is a sin. And that's my stand on that, okay? Yes, ma'am, right here. Okay, the question is, my response this morning to the gentleman who was talking to us about the parsonage being the gather-all for all the church problems. That's what it basically amounts to. And that so many times people say, well, but you both are the pastors. Well, that really isn't true. I've heard people say that. And I've had people to refer to my wife and I, Brother and Sister Gorman, your pastors. They have one pastor, and they have a pastor's wife. And now she ministers to me and ministers with me. We are one, but there's one head, see? And so, and when you let your parsonage become the place, and even if you as a lady feel that God has called you to certain counseling situations where you go counsel with people, and if you can handle that and keep it out of your home, okay, and you're not going to take this problem home, and when your husband gets in, say, you know, today I was counseling this person, but I think I need a little advice from you as to what I should do, and then you're going to talk for another 3 hours about it at home. See, if that's what you got to do, then you don't need to be counseling, okay? But if you're going to counsel, then you should set it up that you're going to go to the church, meet the person at the church, have certain hours you do it. When that hour's up, split and go home. See? But don't bring this into your home. It's unfair to you, your husband. It's unfair to your children. Your children resent it, you know? And they'll turn against the church. They'll become bitter. And if you were to go out and make a survey and really sit down. Some of the kids don't even know why they're bitter at the church. But if you begin to probe into them, I think you'd find in 98% of all cases where kids are bitter at the church is because they could never tell the difference between the church and the parsonage. The only difference was one of them had beds in it and the other one had pews in it. But otherwise, the same things as talked about in church are talked about at home. Except usually the worst part of the church is talked about at home. And so you just don't need that. Your children will resent people barging in on you. See, that's your home. And you need to keep it that way. You don't need these people barging in all the time. They can call, they can come. And they say, well, it's the church parsonage. That's right, but it is your home. And you have to build some guidelines around that to protect your own family. Yes, right back here. Okay, this is a very good question, so that you'll understand the question. Many times it's hard for a pastor to come home and the pressures just automatically turn the pressures off. It's hard for him to do that. So it takes a little while for him to unwind. You can do a lot to help to create that by the atmosphere in the home. The atmosphere when he comes in, not just the cleanliness and things of this nature, but joyful things, happy things. What does he like to do when he gets home? Does he like to sit down for a few minutes? Does he like something to drink? Let him just do what he wants to do for a little bit to unwind and let the atmosphere be what it ought to be in the home. I mean, as far as a relaxed atmosphere. This is why the average wife cannot be up to her ears in the church as the church begins to really grow and minister to her husband. Because when she's got the pressures of these things and she's got to be thinking about how can I help him, just like the sister said, how can I help him to relax? If his motor keeps running when he gets home and continues to run day and night, it's going to pretty soon wear out. And you've got to find a way to turn him off from that. Some kind of a way to turn him off. Something to do, something to talk about, something that's going to break that, that's going to bring it out. Okay? If you can't do it any other way, when the kids are gone to school, sit him down. Talk to him. Say, look, I need to talk with you. Now you're coming home. I'm doing what I can to help you, but you're not trying to help yourself. So when you come in now, we want to do what you want. What do you want me to do? But I don't want you sitting there or staying in the house turned on to these problems for the, till we go to bed. And then lie there on the bed tossing and tumbling with that. So you got to help yourself. I'll do what I can, but you got to help yourself. And you say, well, I can't talk to my husband. Yeah, you can talk to him. You can talk to your husband. Just sit him down and talk to him. You can talk to him. And not only can you talk to him, but he may not agree with you right then, but you've planted a seed that he's going to think. And what you've got to do, honey, is find a way to turn him off, to get him to stop that motor. Change gears, get in neutral. He's got to do that. Okay? Right here, and then I'll get to you, honey.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Williams. That's good. My children are very sensitive in every kind of way to us. They are family. Our home is still their home. They come when they get ready. One of my children, I think it was the youngest boy, said Mark. He said to his mother about, I don't know, maybe a year ago or something, "Well, Mother, you're always busy. We don't have time." You know, and they drop in anytime they want to, and they expect Mother to be there. And so she was talking to me about it and says, "And I really don't know what we're going to do." And I said, "Well, I do. You're just going to be home more where you can see them." She and my daughter go shopping. Whenever Bev lived at home, they deny this, but they went shopping 4 days out of every week. Now, they may not buy anything, but they just wanted to see if any of the mannequins were still dressed as they were whenever that ice was there. But they, my daughter and my wife are best friends, see, and a closeness there. The daughter-in-laws, they look to her. See, you never get through raising your family. And when you think you're through and you quit, that's when your family falls apart. That home is still, I can tell whenever one of my boys is having a little battle. They'll come by the house. They may not say a word. They just lounge around there for a while and raid the icebox or something. But that's home. There's security there, okay? That's always got to be that way, see? And Sister Gorman knows that, and she's sitting here. Any area that I do not portray truthfully, she can stand up and say, "No, that wasn't the way it was." But throughout our married life, it was the children and me that she had to be number one concerned about. And I believe that's why our home has been happy. I believe that's the reason we've been able to cope with problems that come against us. Because, man, you can go a long way when you got your family standing with you. You know, I mean, you can just face just about anything there is to face. And don't let your family be lost. Spend time with them. Be with them. Do with them. The husband can't always do that, but wives, you can bring yourself out. And people, anybody that gets mad at you for wanting to take care of your family, shame on them. They're not interested in you anyway. Was it you that had your hand up? Somebody back here, right here. And then I'll back to you. According to your faith, so be it. I Okay, I think what I would do in that situation, I would, your husband needs to call the superintendent and the presbyter, and y'all need to sit down and talk again. What they can easily do is have a little struggling church and a broken up home. And I don't think your superintendent wants that. And I think y'all need to be honest with him and level with him and let him know that the pressure is too great. You don't need that kind of thing on you right now. You really don't. And I would sit down and talk with him. Okay, I had a hand right over here. Good, thank you. Thank you so much. If you would walk around to that microphone, it would help to clarify some. But I'll take yours from right here, honey, if you will, and I'll repeat it. But anyone else who has a question, just get up while I'm talking. Go on back here to the microphone and be standing there. Sure.
And there are cycles that men go through, and I thank God that my husband and I have been close enough, but yet even though you're close, there's times that they're going through things you don't know, and the devil will play upon maybe weaknesses through their ministry. Could you address that?
Okay.
This is a real life problem.
All right. There is a real problem here, and this is why that it's much easier. As this lady back here put just a few minutes ago, she can serve as a secretary much easier than she can serve as a wife and a mother, because that's what she has learned to do. And so the average woman today who is under 30 years of age has worked in a public job somewhere. She's done secular work. And it's much easier to carry on that than it is to buckle down to being a real wife and a real mother and to be supportive of your husband and ministry there. Another thing is, so much attention that has been drawn to the women, it's made the woman want to come out and to be more vocal and to be more accepted as a, you know, a 50-50 marriage. Well, if you got a 50-50 marriage, you got a mess. If you even got a 51-49 marriage, you got a mess, right? You know, it just don't work that way, and we're living in a fool's paradise to think that. So the sensitivity that you learn and develop with your husband to his needs, if I understand anything about the Bible, the woman was created to be the man's helpmeet. Now, it does not describe anything else there. Go back and read Genesis for yourself. That's all it discusses, that she is to be the helpmate. And helping a man, becoming sensitive to a man, spiritually sensitive to a man, yourself, just like what the lady, our sister, was speaking about here a moment ago. There are many battles that men go through, many trials that men go through, that you, as a woman, can become so selfish with yourself that you're not conscious of the needs. And one of the ways that you can help to bring your husband to be more attentive to you is that you get by giving. And the more of yourself you give, the more that he is going to come back to overshadow you and to minister to you and to help you. There are also cycles that men go through, physical cycles. You do well to get books. There are many good books, and every wife needs to read one. The next thing is, you don't need to get so carried away with yourself that you forget that there are more women in the world than there are men. And there are women who are looking. And there are temptations that are out there. And good men can be tempted just like bad men can be tempted. But what the man does with the temptation depends on two things: his relationship with God and his relationship with his wife. And both of these have to be very strong, okay? You cannot keep your husband happy, you cannot keep your husband fulfilled, unless you yourself is a giving individual. If he feels that he is imposing upon you every time that he needs your time or needs you to be with him or anything of this nature, that you have just come in from this meeting and that meeting and some other meeting, then this is going to go. If he's sensitive to you, he's not going to impose on you, okay? But all the time, his needs are not being met. I'm not just speaking about sexually. I'm speaking about just a man and woman relationship, okay? See, there are times that I don't want my wife talking to me. I don't want her saying anything to me. I don't want her doing anything. I just want her there, okay? And I don't want her uptight while she is there. And I don't want her rushing, trying to get ready to do something else, to get away, okay? I just want her there. That's why I go home, because she's there. If she's not there, I don't want to go home. No need to go home. It's time to go to bed, so I go to a restaurant and eat. But I'm going home because she's there. And women, I'm telling you, in the age that we're living in, and I know you got talents, you got abilities, but you're going to have to learn to share in your husband's ministry and rejoice with him in the successes that he has without having to try to build for yourself a name. And we got too many women that are trying to do that. And we got some brilliant women that you could succeed in the business world. You can succeed anywhere you'd set your head to go. But after you succeed, if you lose your family, what have you got? What have you got? And you've got to learn, and now's the time to learn to be sensitive to your husband. Now. Not whenever he's 40. That's too late then, because there's so many resentments and bitternesses and hurts that are built up in there until he don't want you talking to him then about those things. Now's the time to be sensitive. And I may as well go ahead and talk about this for a minute. Dear God. I better not talk very long. Your attitude toward your husband, your attitude toward his needs, your attitude toward your sexual relationship, you giving of yourself to him, you enticing him to want you, is part of your ministry. It doesn't make God's face turn red when you talk about sex. He's not embarrassed about it. He created it. He's not ashamed of it. He may be ashamed of the way some people use it. But sex is not a weapon that you use to get what you want. If you'll read the book, when you say, "I will," at the altar, then you no longer have control over your body except on two occasions, when you're sick and when you're fasting. And just for your information, you better not be sick too long, and you better not fast too long. You better find a happy medium. Being attractive. Wear what he likes. Don't spend all of your money on clothes you're going to wear on the street. Some of you, you'll catch it next week. I'm trying to deal with this without making any of your faces turn red. And some of you, you're sitting there, "I can't believe he said that." Preachers are God's men, but they're still men. And you have been chosen in a very precious place to help God's chosen servants. And pray that God can help you to be happy in what he is doing. To help him there. You don't have to have your own thing. Sister Gorman, she can go speak, she can do these things, as long as it don't interfere with what I want. You say, "Oh, you can't keep her from doing God." God's will is that she keeps me happy. See? And if her going somewhere interferes with my happiness, then she has to cancel that. Now, I know some people won't agree with that. See? But that's just the way it's supposed to be. You're to be a helpmeet to him. Share, work together, works hand in hand, if that's where you're the happiest. When your husband begins to get around 40 to 50, a lot of things he fussed about when he was 25, he won't fuss about anymore. He'll just kind of clam up, but it's taking its toll. There's a reason why there's so many divorces with people in the age of 50s, and the minister has not been exempt from it. And you may think that you have swayed him over, but you hadn't. He's just convinced that you're so hard-headed you're not going to change, so he's just waiting his time. But you're losing every day. Every day that you live, you're losing. And things that you know that you do, and some of the things that happens with women who are unhappy working beside their husband, then they are always trying to correct him in public. Or if he starts to tell something, you pick it up and finish it for him. Now, when he's 25, when he gets you home, he'll shake you till your liver quivers. Or he'll chew you out. See? But when he gets 40, he won't do that. And she's humiliating me and she's putting me down. I'm dealing with three marital situations right now that it'll take a miracle of God to hold them together. And all three of them are in this category. And all three of them are in their 40s. It'll take a miracle to hold them together. And there was a time whenever the husband would just pitch a fit. But a man, hey, you can disagree with him all you want to at home. But when in public, to make him look like a fool, and for you to constantly be telling him, you know, he's talking and you're putting in little bits and pieces here and there to correct him on, you're killing yourself. Now, I use that only as one area of illustration, but that's true in every area of a man's life. If he ever loses respect for you, he doesn't want you sexually. He doesn't want you as a friend. He doesn't want you. He really doesn't want to eat with you when he loses respect for you. I mean, it's out. See, relationships between you and your companion is 90% respect. If you don't respect them, then you don't want relationships with them. No kind of relationship. See? And you've got to conduct yourself in such a way as to make him proud of you. Now, I know there's a lot of things I can turn the card, I can turn the coin over, and I can say a lot of things that men do that aggravate and provoke these things, okay? But what I'm saying is, these are things you need to be working on from the time you marry until your children are grown. But what many people do, they wrap themselves around their children and become fulfilled with their children. And then when their children are gone, they still got to face this guy or this woman one and work out the problems they should have worked out the first 4 or 5 years they was married. And these are things you need to get resolved at this point. We could spend all morning on this, but it's a very critical and important area. And you need to work on it. If your husband is one of those individuals whose pride is so great that he can't read a book, then you need to get him to talk to someone. If he won't talk to someone, then you need to get a friend to talk to him. I've talked to a lot of men. For instance, there are men who feel that because they are a male, that they understand everything there is to know about a woman and sex. And the average man is so dumb until he could write everything he knows about sex in the palm of his hand and still have plenty of room left. See? And there are books all over. See, I won't perform a marriage for a young couple until they have gone through the pastoral care department and they have read one book on sexual relationships. I won't perform the wedding. It's just that firm. So these are very critical things that you need to come to grips with. Now you say, but Brother Gorman, why is it so important now and back when Grandma? Because when Grandma was living, to get a divorce was worse than being the Antichrist. And today it isn't, see? It's looked upon differently. And that's why you have so much of it. And it's going to be more and more. So that's why we got to come to grips with problems, deal with them, and master them. Amen. Give us the microphone back there. It's not on somehow.
When my husband and I started pastoring a year and a half ago, the church had 7 people in it besides our family. I was asked to teach the young people, and then I took on the social activities of the church, and then I took on the nursery of the church, and I did all of this. The church has grown now to where we're running around 60 to 80 on Sunday morning. We've tried the rotation basis of the nursery. It doesn't work. But really what I am struggling with is finding my place. Also, before this, we'd pastor the church. My husband's always worked, and I've always been the pastor's wife that went and made all the visits. When our people were having surgery, I was there. When they were sick, I was there. My husband had to be at work because we had obligations we had to meet. And now we're trying to change because 6 weeks ago we went full-time. Well, when he went full-time at the church, I went to work to get away from the phone, to get away from the people so that they would call him and not call me. But it is a change in our lifestyle that we're having to learn to deal with. And when I tell the people that I'm pulling back out of positions, they think that I'm pulling away from them. I don't mean to pull away from people because I love them so much. But I need to know how and what am I supposed to do? What is my position? And especially as the church grows, because we can visualize the church being large. Within the next year, I expect it to be double what it is now because it has grown so fast. But I still need to know what am I to do. And I know deep down that my position is pastor's wife taking care of the pastor and my children. My children are teenagers. My son graduates this year, so I still feel like they need Mama at home, and my husband needs me. But struggling with the church positions, what do I do?
Okay. Your husband will have to do it, and he'll have to start teaching the people from the platform. My wife and I have lived for a number of years with a certain amount of guilt because I was not able to do what I knew I should be doing as a pastor. And now for the first time, I can really pastor you, and she can really be my wife. And so I'm asking you people to help us. See, reach out to your people. Don't be afraid to tell your people that you made a mistake. It may have been forced upon you, but you knew that wasn't God's perfect will. God allowed it. God blessed you in spite of it, but it still is not God's perfect will. And reach out to your people and ask your people to help you. You'll just be amazed what people will do whenever that you don't try to drive them, but you try to lead them. And just pull them in, and they love you. It's a new church. They've come in under y'all's ministry. So they'll respond to that, honey. And your husband's got to take that. Now, he's not in here. One of your biggest battles is going to be jealousy. He's taking your people away from you. And now you're going to have to wrestle with that. You're going to have to pray through over it. And you got to realize, God, I was put in this position, but I knew all the time that I wasn't supposed to be here. I was supposed to be with him. Now, God, you help me. And he will. That's going to be the biggest battle of this whole thing. It's not going to be your people. It's not going to be your husband doing what he's supposed to do. But the battle is going to become between you and your husband. And if you don't master it, the devil will take advantage of it. But I believe I sense in your spirit a sincerity, and I believe you will master it. Amen.
I'm a little nervous, so I hope this comes out right. You were talking about your social life, too, and I was wondering, as a pastor and his wife, how social should we come with the church? Let's say a smaller church that really wants to be family, and they have dinners and things like that, but how social should we be without them thinking we're stuck up, or how would we handle that when we're invited to dinners and things, because people really want you to let down your hair and be you, but yet, I don't want to sound snobbish, you still have a little standard you have to live up to. How do you handle that?
When our church was yet small, we recognized that this problem was coming, and that if we were to ever grow, it's okay as long as you only have 25 families in the church, you can go visit them, and you can eat with them, and you can keep everybody happy. But whenever you get scores of families in the church, then you can't eat everywhere. You don't have the time, there are not enough days in the year, and this type of thing. So we gradually began to pull away. We were busy, and we had schedules. We had things that we did with our children. We had things we were involved with. We had time that we tried to do ourselves together. And we just began to back away and say, well, we just really don't have the time. And now then, occasionally, we will go to a home and eat. But I don't guess that we have gone to a home and just ate with just a family in a home in probably 12, 14 years. Just a single family. And we'll say to the person, well, who all is going to be there? If we think we can go. And they've learned now that they'll go by me to Jan and say, does Brother Gorman have this night open? And because they know that if it's going to happen, they've got to get it on my calendar. Okay? And so recently we went across the river and we ate, and there must have been, 20 or more families that was there, or couples that was there. And we went in and ate with them, and soon as through, we left. Okay? One of the things, and seldom this ever happens, but it aggravates me. See, this was before that God dealt with me with other things, it dealt with me on this. They invite us to come to eat. When my wife gets there, she's been busy all day, she still has to help put everything on the table. Then she eats. And then when she gets through, we go in the house and we sit down and we men talk. She has to get up and help wash the dishes. And then by the time she gets through helping clean up the kitchen, then he has to go home. Well, that aggravated me. You know, if you invite us to come to your house to eat, then we're not supposed to have to clean your house before we eat.
nor cook the meal. Now, I don't mean that ugly, see, but I mean, if my wife's got to do all of that, then let's stay home. See, it's not nearly as much stress on her. It's not as much stress on us. So it's really no outing for her at all. None whatsoever. So we just started saying, well, you know, and here's one of the ways we start breaking off. I know in rural communities you can't do this, but we started breaking off a lot. Well, you know, maybe we could just stop at a restaurant somewhere and get a bite to eat. That way you don't kill the whole evening. You don't have as much time that way. But going into a home, and if you don't quit it while the church is small, then you're going to have real problems when the church gets larger. And I can't tell you, hey, here's step 1, 2, 3, 4, and here's how you do it. All I can say is find a solution for your situation and begin to break out of it. Because you cannot be the pastor you ought to be and visit in homes at least 2 nights out of every week. You just can't do it. There's no way you can. And neither can you have any kind of family life. Okay?
Okay, my question is taken from a single's point of view, and I would like to know what advice would you give a young lady who feels that she is called to the full-time ministry, and also when she gets older, she wants to have a family, and yet her family's salvation has not been granted yet, and she's only been walking with the Lord for 1 year and 3 months. And also I would like to know what's your opinion on Christian dating.
Okay. The first is the call of God. Certainly God calls a lot of women, calls young women into various phases of ministry. And very likely you've only been a Christian now for, I believe you said, 1.5 years. And so if you continue to seek God, very likely he, before you develop a ministry, he will bring someone into your life that you would marry. But if he doesn't, then who you marry later on, you will have to weigh. Is this going to interfere with what God wants me to do? Or am I supposed to remain single all of my life? These are things you're going to have to wrestle with as you move along. Okay? Whether your family comes to God or not has nothing to do with the call of God upon your life. God will take care of them as you prove yourself to obey him, as he did my family. Christian dating. I'm a person who has been very rigid in this area. I don't think that it is healthy for a person who feels a call on their ministry to just date everyone who comes along, you know, that seems to be a nice person, or just to date for the sake of dating. I never did that. And I'm not saying I was all right, but I never did that. Neither do I believe you should date a person unless you feel something in your heart that God's leading in that way. I feel that God may let you have a relationship with a person that you know and he knows that you would never marry, but you've got to be honest with one another and not lead one another along. You're just kind of like friends like. And there are relationships like that that you may have. But you have to be honest with the person. Don't marry someone, I mean, don't date someone that you cannot see that they would fit into your ministry. I mean, don't even date them the first time. See, someone said to me, says, well, Brother Gorman, how did you marry someone who was so talented? I said, I wouldn't date anyone that wasn't talented. That's a good way not to marry someone that's not talented. You know, I mean, but I'm not saying everybody's got to do that, but that was the thing with me, you know. If they were not talented in some way that could fit into the ministry, hey, you know, I wanted someone that could feel they were a part of me by contributing in the ministry. And so I just dated people that could do that. I watched the person, and if they could not contribute in ways that I felt, well then, I didn't marry them. I wouldn't date them, brother. And so there's no possibility of marrying them if you didn't date them. So you have to be open to that.
We have 3 teenage boys, and since your children are grown and 2 of them were boys, I thought maybe you might could lend a little bit of advice along these lines. Prior to coming to this school, we sent our three children off to our district CA convention. And upon pulling loose ends together and beginning to gather things to put in the car, we found a note from one of our children. Telling us of an involvement in a very serious problem. Our children have never been rebels. They have always been very respectful of their father's ministry, and they are all honor students in school. We have never had any problem whatsoever with them. But it was just about more than what I knew how to handle. And the Lord has given me somewhat of a peace over this. However, I know that there are things that have to be faced and steps that have to be taken when we go back home. And I wondered if you could perhaps give a little bit of advice along these lines.
First of all, you can be extremely thankful that he let you know. That is probably 80% of the battle right there. Now, how you handle the knowledge that he gave to you will determine what he's going to do in the future. And not knowing the situation any more than what you said, which is very vague, and I'm not asking for anything else. But what I would do when I got back home, I would sit down with him, you and your husband, and I'd let him talk. I'd let him talk about why he did it. I'd let him talk about how he feels about it now. I'd let him just talk this thing out. Now he's hurting, see? He's feeling guilt. And now then, the one thing that he does not want is rejection. He wants you to reach out to him and help him through this thing. He could have turned to someone else that might would have sent him in a different direction. But no one loves him like his mom and dad does. And so I would go back with no spirit of anger, a spirit of compassion, a spirit of love, and any anger that you would be there would be toward the devil who had tripped him and trapped him. But I would reach out to him and let him talk to us. And then I would help him then to come through it. I don't think you have to jump on him and say, will you ever do this again and promise this and I'm going to take this away from you and take that away from you and all this stuff. I'm not sure that would be the approach. Because, see, he opened the door. See? Now then, if he repents, and if he is wanting to prove that, hey, I'm sorry I did this, give him that chance. Give him that chance. And support him and help him. Let him know that you're hurt. Let him know that you're crushed. He already knows that, but reassure him of that. But let him know that you're going to help him through this thing, that you're going to stand with him, and that you're going to help him to win. Whatever it takes, you're going to win as a family. And that would be my approach to take to it, honey.
My father and I are very close, and he has asked my husband to be the assistant pastor. And I have a strong nature. I was wondering, as it is, which adds to maybe a possibility of a problem, we haven't taken the assistant pastor yet. Can you give me any advice?
Yeah. Go there and be the wife. Be the wife of the associate pastor. And that's all. Only get involved, not because you're daddy's girl, but get involved as anyone else would get involved in the church through the proper channels. If you want to teach a Sunday school class, go to the Sunday school superintendent. Go to daddy. See, this is one of the things that some of the people in this church that sit on the fringe edges still don't know. But my children, my two boys that work for me, to get something done in the ministry, they have to go through the same channels that anyone else does. They go to the general manager, they present it, they talk about it, then they come to me, we talk about it, and it's handled from that. They don't come by the general manager to me. See, they go through the same procedures. Just like Mark's, the truck that Mark uses in the ministry. He has a van. Well, that van, I think, has got something like, 150,000 miles on it. It's worn out. He's drove the thing all over the nation. And it's time to trade. And so he mentioned to me, he said, well, Dad said, we're going to have to get rid of the thing because it's really not safe to drive, and I think it'd cost too much to get it fixed. I said, well, you need to go and talk to Bob about that, and y'all need to get some figures together, and you need to get all that worked out. And that's the way it's handled. He doesn't come to me, and then I pick up the phone and call. He would do just like Brother Brakebill would do. With Brother Brakebill works in the department. He'd do the same way. He'd come through the general manager and from that up to me. And when working in a church, especially after you're married, you can get by with more things before you're married than you can after you're married. But after you're married, if your father's a minister and you're going to work on the same staff with him, then you have to go through the same channels everybody else does. If you don't, you'll create problems for him as well as yourself and your husband. And little girls have more problems with that than boys do. Because, but Bev, still Bev does the same thing. Through the music program, everything, all the budget and everything, they go through the same channels anyone else does. They don't come straight to me. Even as close as we are, they don't come straight to me with it. They go through channels. So that would be my advice. Where are you, honey? Does that sound good? But I wouldn't back down just because you're dad. Just be in there. And for whatever you do, don't you and daddy ever decide on anything that you're going to tell your husband. Okay?
I don't know how many other ladies had this problem, but I'm sure there's many. I grew up in an unsaved home, but my parents always sent us to a Pentecostal church from the age of 3. And coming into Bible school, there was a disillusionment. You'd always hear from the fellows that were there, they were always looking for a girl who could play piano, sing alto, and look good at conventions. That was the standard. And can anybody relate to that? And the thing that used to bother me the most was they never looked at the spiritual quality of the woman. And now, in the situation we're in, we're pastoring an interdenominational church that has been going for 4 years, and we are averaging about 700 people. And they're coming from Catholic backgrounds, and they're like birds with their mouths wide open. And here you are, trying to be an example to them and feed them things, and they're about this much higher than you are. So it's not a problem, it's a challenge to you to be provoked, to be all that you can be in God. But again, hearing you talk, it's like, I don't know if I'm under conviction or condemnation, is how much do I give myself to my family? I have 2 children, and I do, I feel like I am, but then, I'm sorry, but yet there's this group of women whose husbands are faithful men who my husband is imparting to, therefore I feel an obligation to impart to them, to prepare them coming into leadership. So now my dilemma is, where's the balance, you know, without feeling convicted or condemned in whatever.
Okay, how much time are you having to give to this away from your family? And what is it doing to your family relationship, and how are your children reacting to it?
Well, right now they're both so small that I don't sense a reaction at all.
Okay. See, and this, to me, is one of the critical areas. Now, this is even more critical with you as a pastor's wife than it would be if you were serving as a secretary downtown and dropping your children off at a daycare. And the reason being is your children are going to be put under a tremendous amount of pressure. And even from this stage, now, my daughter's son is 14 months old.
okay? While my daughter-in-law was giving birth to the baby, and through two or three other things that was happening, my daughter had to leave my grandson with her, with his grandmother on the father's side for a few days. This is her only grandchild. Anyone who knows Sister Bilbo, she is nothing but love. So all she's done is love that child. But little Brandon began to feel a sense of being left out, being rejected, okay? Now, he's only 14 months old. And now then his mother can just walk out of the room where he's at and he starts calling for her. See? So your children are never so small that it doesn't affect them. And this is the thing that I'm saying. See, Sister Gorm will tell you that from the time our children came into this world, that her number one job was to care for them, to help them. I never, as she's seated here, and I can say this, I have never complained about what she cooked or what she didn't cook. I've never complained about that. She's a good housekeeper. She's a good cook. But these things, there have been many a time that we had tuna fish, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. She didn't have time to do otherwise. And I was happy with it because my children were happy. See? And so right now, look what we're doing as a family. Because we spend our time with our family. And what is being done as a productive thing. Now, first of all, I don't mind having a session like this with women here and with men over there. But this is not the best setting. It's only to do this occasionally. Now, I know, and I'm an executive presbyter with the Assemblies of God, but I can say this. The Sunday school department thinks that you can't have an effective Sunday school class over attendance of about 100. But my Sunday school class ran about 1,200. It's not supposed to work, but it did. Why did it work? Because I had men and women together teaching them together. Okay? Now, don't take offense to what I'm going to say, honey, please, because I'm trying to help you. Okay. What you're saying is that I am as good a teacher as my husband is. Now, you're not saying that outwardly, but in essence, you are. And I can teach the women and bring them along as fast as he can teach the men and bring them along. And my guess is you can't. See? They need to sit together. They need to learn together. They need to grow together. See? See, now it's okay. I'm even against women's Bible classes in Sunday school as such. Now don't go back and change yours if you don't want to. But the husband and wife, why separate them? What's the big deal? They can't get along together? You know? Leave them together, teach them together. Let them grow together, see? And what your husband is teaching can be taught to the women at the same time.
Yeah, I think I just didn't give it right.
Okay.
It's not like I take all the women of the church and he takes all the men. There's three couples actually that we feel have leadership potential because we bring the leaders up through the body.
Right.
So.
Wrong with it, except for this one thing. See, what you are doing is that you are cultivating three women, developing them, that they're going to go out and they're going to reach other women. And then they're going to keep bringing their problems back to you. And you're not ever going to get away from them. If it was me, I'd let the husband teach them for 3 weeks out of the month, and then you meet with them for one time, just to talk about how a woman relates to things and let him do the teaching of them together. Because they are going to need to work together, the husband and wives, whenever they go into the ministry. And I really think that you're developing something there that you're going to regret down the road. As much as I can,
I present my wife, and have done this, as my wife. Not as a teacher, not as a leader, as my wife. I want people to see her as my wife. Then they're going to respect her as my wife. Because they're going to know if they touch her, that's the same as touching me. See, but if you develop these things to where you're putting yourself in this era of leadership, and your husband, then you're going to be dealing with problems over here that your husband can't protect you from, which is going to develop into relationships between you and your husband, or lack of relationships, that you're not going to like. And it's going to affect your children. See, you only got three now. But see, those three are going to touch how many more in the next 5 years? See? And that's your building, I think, okay? Now, y'all going to wrestle this out, but you asked me for my opinion, and mm-hmm. I think you're building an unhealthy thing. I think all you got to do is just reverse it.
Mm-hmm. So the tendency may be that they could see me more in a leadership or pastor capacity than my husband. So
what
that
they're
going
to do, they're going to bring all the women problems to you, and they're going to take all the men problems to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that's unkind, but women have more problems than men do, so your job is going to be heavier in the time to come.
Thank you.
Does that make sense?
Yes, I receive
okay,
that.
Thank you. Don't anyone go to the mic. I'm going to try to get through this. We've only got 5 minutes. Supposed to quit at 12, is that right? Do you have a schedule? Yeah.
My question may seem a little vague. And I really don't understand it myself. But I was brought into the assemblies through the Baptist, and then come to know my husband, and we got into the Assembly of God Church. And in our younger lives, we were taught that you do not question your pastor. You know, he's right. And I was brought into a very strict holiness movement. This is a bad question, I know. Holiness is such a controversial issue. And I may be the only one who has this struggle, but I have a lot of struggles. I didn't question all those things then. And as I have grown in the Lord and matured in pastoring different churches, I have seen so many mistakes that we've made in our lives, trying to tell people how to live and what to do. And I have seen so much love here, Brother Gorman, in your people, that I feel like that there's got to be more to it than that. You know, holiness is not what you wear. And I have condemnations in my heart. I feel like people that knew us when we began, they say, well, you cut your hair, you're a sinner now. I can't cope with all these problems. I feel like maybe I'm the only one that
No, honey,
has
you're not the only
problems.
One. There are millions out there that's suffering with the same thing.
I'm raising a daughter, and how do I tell her? Well, this is just the way it is when they say separation. Do we have to live such a separated life? We feel like something so different. Does separation mean we have to look different, that we have to be different? I don't understand these things anymore.
Well, let Brother Gorman help you. I was raised up the same way. I came out of the Church of Christ. And the Church of Christ, they don't believe in music. They don't believe in a lot of things that we have. They believe basically in water baptism and communion. Communion every Sunday, and you're not saved till you're baptized. You're baptized to wash away your sins. Very liberal, and so that's all I knew until I came into Pentecost. And then I came into Pentecost into a very rigid. It was a sin to do everything but breathe. And it was constantly beat over your head, constantly. In 1960, I was in this city. I was a state youth director. I was having a lot of problems. I was going through a lot of battles. There were people receiving the baptism of the Holy Spirit. I heard them speak with tongues myself, and they still smoked. And I couldn't handle it. I just couldn't handle it. There were people that I had seen accept Christ, and they didn't instantaneously become what I thought was a saint. And I couldn't handle it. I'd been taught that they're supposed to do that. I saw women that they went to church and they spoke in tongues, what have you. They wore backless dresses and things like that, and that was same as being a prostitute where we came from. I couldn't handle any of that. And I don't condone that. Don't get that through your head that I condone anything of this. But we were basing all of the relationship that a person had on the outward appearance, how it looked to our natural eye. And so I went into my bedroom here in this city, in a pastor's home, and I got on my knees beside the bed and buried my face in my hands on the carpet, and I started crying. And the only time I've ever told God that I quit preaching, that's the only time. No, I have never doubted that I was called to preach, never one time. And I didn't doubt my call then. I just said, God, something's wrong. Something is wrong. And either I'm wrong or they're wrong, but I've got to have an answer. I can't handle this. And I said, unless I can get some answers, I'm going to have to quit the ministry because I cannot be a hypocrite. And I must have cried desperately before God. I don't know, it must have been close to 3 hours. I was broken. I was torn to pieces. And God spoke to me and said, read 1 Corinthians. I'd read 1 Corinthians dozens of times, but I had never read it with the understanding the Spirit gave me that day. The church at Corinth had every sin in it that you could find, and it came short in no gift. And what God showed me was that holiness is a progressive work in the life of a person that brings them into sanctification. And that there are a lot of people who accept Jesus and they really love Him, but they do not instantly conform to what we think they ought to be. It has to be a work within their lives. From that day to this, I've never told a person how they should dress. I've never preached outward holiness. I've left it to the work of the Word of God and the Spirit of God. Because if the Spirit does not do it, you put a person in bondage. And I don't care whether it's bondage to heathenism or bondage to a standard of holiness. Bondage is bondage. And a person cannot love God and worship God in freedom if they're in bondage. And the bondage that these people have, who are always talking about how you ought to live and what you ought to do, let that holiness come through. Let me give to you a typical illustration, and so many of you are raising children. When our son Randy was in his senior year in school, he came to me and he says, Dad, what should I do about the prom? Now, the prom in New Orleans is something else. Most of the kids in the public schools, they get drunk. They rent motel rooms. They spend the night together. It's just horrible. I mean, and it's no different in any other city. I mean, this is just the standard of life today. And he said, what should we do? Well, he wanted me to tell him. And I said, well, son, we better pray about that. I tell you what, let's do. Let's fast and pray. And Dad, I fast with you. that God would give us an answer as to what to do. Because he didn't want to look like a fool. He didn't want his kids to think, well, I've gone to school with you all these years, but now that we're graduating, I'm so holy I can't be with you. I knew what he was fighting. How do you handle it? And I said, well, fast and pray. And we set a day that we'd fast together, and we prayed. And I said, then we'll continue to pray till Friday that God will give us an answer. Well, Wednesday night, he came to me. He said, Dad, I got my answer. I said, oh, you have? He said, yes, sir. I said, what is it? He said, why don't I get my date? And we will be at the prom when it starts. Because they don't start drinking immediately. And we will move through there real quickly so everybody will see us and we'll speak to them and what have you. And then I'll make a reservation at one of the real nice restaurants in the city. And we will leave there, my date and I, and we'll go to this restaurant and we'll have dinner. And then we'll come on home. I said, son, I think that's a super idea. He saw his kids that he went to school with. He spoke to them. Within 25 minutes after he got there, they were gone. They had a lovely evening. They were not condemned. He did not jeopardize his Christian testimony. Now, there'd have been some people who said, oh, but bless God, I want you to know that if you're a Christian, you wouldn't even go there. I don't find that in the Bible. How's the world going to see a Christian if they all hid? Amen. And some of his classmates have come to know Jesus since they graduated. See, your children will make good decisions if you'll give them a chance. And this outward holiness that people pounce on and preach and preach and preach and preach and preach, if you don't watch it, it'll fill you with bitterness. It'll fill you with a self-righteous pride that stinks. And it'll make you harder than this floor. You have no love. You have no compassion. You have no sympathy. You can't be touched. Everything is legalism. And that's not scriptural. If the Holy Spirit does not sanctify you, you'll never be sanctified. Amen. And let me say one other word. Honey, if I were you, I'd pray and seek God, and I'd talk to my husband. And if the pressure is so great at that particular point with you and your children and what have you, I believe God will move you all out of that whole area, maybe to another state somewhere. God does not want your family destroyed.
Most of the questions and areas of dealt with the pastor's wife and families. I feel like there's another area that has overlapped so much with the pastor's life in his office as a pastor's secretary. You work so closely with his family and with his wife and with the pastor. I'd like to hear from your heart. I sat in on Jan's sessions. I listened to her tapes and I appreciate it so much, but I've just felt like I'd like to hear from the pastor himself. What is the real ministry of the secretary? Where are her boundaries? Breaking down a communications between the pastor and the secretary. When you feel called into the ministry as the helps ministry with the pastor, into the ministry of interceding for his ministry, the pastor standing behind the decisions she's had to make, where she's become a buffer, she's become a sounding board. I'd just like to hear some of this from you.
First of all, and one of my secretaries is standing by the back door back there that works with me, Linda. Jan is the one that works in the office next to me. A pastor is a fool who does not keep his relationship with his secretary on a very professional level. She is my secretary. I love her. I appreciate her. She loves me. But working as closely as you work, relationships can develop that are unhealthy if you don't keep it on a professional level. And Jan is a very professional person, and so am I. We work, we do our work. We have no social times together. Maybe once or twice a year, she may be at a function where my wife and I are, or at a dinner party where we are with several other families, but as far as building close, close relationships, okay? As the church began to grow, and things were so difficult for my family even to get to me, then I put in a separate phone so that my children nor my wife has to go through my secretary to get to me. This is very important. No wife likes to be told by another woman, don't care how godly that other woman is, you can't talk to your husband right now. Okay? Neither do your children. It will build up it'll build up resentment toward these people when they're only doing their job. Jan knows my schedule. She plans a great percent of my schedule. 90% of the people who see me come through her. That's the only way they get to me, is through her. And when a person understands your load, has a burden for you, understands the responsibilities you have, from time to time the pastor has to sit down with them and talk to them and say, now, are you really evaluating the situation properly? Not that you, and they have to be big enough that they can realize, hey, he's not fussing at me. He's just making me take a new look at where I'm at. Are you just putting these people off? Are you sensitive enough to what their needs are? And there are a lot of people, and the secretary can become so sensitive and can work so closely with you that she can know who can be helped by someone else and who really needs to see the pastor. Aren't you the lady to ask a question? Okay, you look differently here than you did back there. And so, she has to work that close to help to screen this. She knows your personal life in many areas. She knows where you're going. She knows things about you that no one else other than your family knows. And she has to be a person that can keep her mouth shut. She can't be a person who goes around, what I mean by that she's that we're doing anything that we care for other people knowing. But see, a secretary can create hell for you by just saying, well, you know, it's really nice to be in on the know. That's all she has to say. She does not have to say one other word. And every woman in the church hates her guts. Right? See? And so she's got to be a person that's sensitive, that does not... And Jan is that sensitive. She came to me one time and she says, Brother Gorman, she said, I know how you are toward your people and how you feel toward your staff and all, but I don't want a close social life with you and your family because people already resent me because I have access to you that they don't have. And she says, I don't want to create more resentment by having more social life. So I prefer, not that I don't enjoy being with you and your wife, not that I wouldn't enjoy going to dinner with you all. Not that I wouldn't enjoy these things. I would. But it's not healthy for you, and it's not healthy for the church. See? And so this is the type of secretary that you need that helps you. A secretary can make or break you. They really can. They can be ugly. They can be hateful. They can be curt. And then they can get sensitive to what people say. There are people who tell things on Jan that she's never thought of, much less did. You know, like, for instance, well, I called 40 times to talk to you, and she wouldn't even return my call. Well, she might not have got a chance to call, but she had Linda to call. Somebody got back, if they kept calling, somebody got back to them and talked to them to try to help them. But see, I don't know exactly, we haven't checked now in about a year, but about a year ago we run a test on how many calls comes to that office for me per day, and it averaged 93 calls per day. Now, that's just for me. That's not people calling her saying, what is the dates of this, and what about this, and what about that. The telephone alone will drive you up the wall, see? That's just to that one. I call this church a lot of times, and we have 10 single lines coming in here. And I call a lot of times and get a busy signal, because all 10 lines are tied up. So you can see the task that is there. So what I'm saying is, a good secretary to the pastor has a tender, tender heart and has skin like an elephant that people can hurt them. You know, they can say things and what have you, but they take it with a smile. Like one guy said to Jen one day, said he was going to see me anyway. And she says, I'm sorry you can't. Reverend Gorman is very busy. And he says, I feel like kicking your shins. And she, smiling, said, now this was told to me by another secretary, said, she just kept smiling, said, if I were you, I wouldn't follow my feelings. But the personal relationship that there is, Jan and I, and this is something that is a normal for a person to want to do, but you have to watch it. The secretary may want to come in, and the pastor may want to start using her as a sounding board. That's not good. Because somewhere down the road, there won't... Hey, I'm not saying there's going to some immoral something develop. I'm not talking about that. It's just not good, because there will be a relationship that will build there that you will depend on this person to talk to rather than talking with your wife. Plus the fact you'll be sharing things, the first thing you know, that you got no business sharing with anybody. That it breeds a familiarity that should not be there. Am I coming through? And both persons have to work on this. When I go in my office, I'm there to work. She's there to work. We don't spend time just shooting the breeze about what's going on and what's happening and this sort of thing. We want average spend 20 minutes a month just talking about the good services and the great things. We don't do that. We work. And a smart pastor will keep it that way. Did I help anything? Did I cover anything you asked? Is there another area that specifically you want to pinpoint? I felt like... Do what? Okay, when she has to make a decision and the pastor standing behind her, I have a policy with Jan. If there is any question in your mind as to the decision you're making, do not make it till you confer with Bob Boswell, Carl Miller, and Dan Flanagan. Use them as a sounding board. If you still feel uncomfortable after you confer with them, reach me wherever I am. There is never a time, unless I'm in flight, that she cannot reach me. I refuse to let her make a decision that she's uncomfortable with, okay, until she talks to me. And then if she takes it on herself to make a decision without conferring with me, and it's a wrong decision, then I won't back her. You follow me? See, I can't afford to do that. I have to sit down with her and whoever she made the decision with and say, well, that was a wrong decision, and we're sorry, but Jan just misunderstood, and we have to work it that way. But usually the decisions she makes are decisions relating to scheduling of people to see me. And in those things, I use her judgment. If I feel that her judgment is wrong, in other words, if you were trying to see me, and Jen put you off because your problem wasn't as great as hers, and she came in first, and then you pitched a fit about it and tried to blame Jen about it, then I would stand with Jen in your presence. If I had any question about it, then I would call Jen in. I said, now, Jen, I don't think you handled that properly. But she never knows that I talked to Jen about it, okay? See, I would never embarrass Jen. I don't embarrass my staff, none of my staff, in front of anybody. Never. My staff has a right, every staff member I have has a right to disagree with me. They have that privilege in my office. But if they can't sell me and change my mind, when we walk outside that door and that door is shut, my decision rides and everybody smiles. If they want to stay, that's the way it's going to be. See, now, but they can change me. I have been changed with, my opinion has been changed by, I guess, every staff member I have. I don't even set myself in any way that I have the last word as to this is the will of God, you know. I mean, in programs and policy, they can change me. And I've changed many times. I changed just last week on something. Because whenever they had studied it, researched it, presented it to me, I saw that it was going the wrong way. I said, hey, man, let's change it. See? So they can do that. But if they had done all their research, and I still felt in my spirit, this is the way to go, then everybody has to accept that and not talk about it to my back and let me find out. It has to be that way. We're over time. Thank you. God bless you. It's been a joy sharing with you.